Hello, and welcome to the AgTech So What podcast. Emerging technologies are rapidly changing the global agricultural industry, and we believe that this revolution is only getting started. But there's still too much hype out there and too big of a disconnect between ag and ag tech. So on this show, we try to bridge that gap. In each episode, we bring you the story of a different innovator in agriculture and try to find the place where ag and tech meet. I'm your host, Sarah Nolette.
Welcome back to the AgTech So What podcast. Today, I was joined by a bit of a celebrity. Rob Sharkey is an ag social media guru and speaker, and now has his own radio program and TV show, really active in ag Twitter and ag social media, and has his own podcast, The Shark Farmer, which is actually how we met. I came on his podcast a few months ago, and so it was great to have him back to come on this one. We talk a lot about social media and how that's changing the conversation in ag, whether that's getting help for kind of tech support stuff or bridging the gap with consumers or things like podcasts, just going deeper into different farms and sharing the stories of different farmers. And Rob's definitely the master at that. We ramble a bit in the beginning of this podcast. I'm trying to kind of figure out what we're going to talk about. We kind of go from tech to consumers and what Rob's up to with all of his different businesses. But at the end, was really happy to get into some kind of media issues around the rural-urban divide and what Rob's doing in that space to bridge the gap and really listening to consumers as well as talking about ag and all the different complexities that consumers might not know about. So this was a really fun episode to record. Always great to chat with Rob, and I hope you enjoy it. So, Rob Sharkey, welcome to the podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here.
Good. Well, I'm thrilled to have you. And yeah, we'll see where we go today. I have a bunch of different questions for you about social media and ag and advocacy and a bunch of things I've been wanting to ask you for a while. So really looking forward to chatting today. But where in the world are you today?
I am in my studio at Bradford, Illinois.
Nice. And is that on the farm? Is that near the outfitter? Like, I actually don't know much about your setup and how the various businesses you're involved in fit together.
Yeah, I do run a deer outfitter, and we have the lodge that's on the farm. So it's, 100 steps from my house, and that's where I've got the studio.
So you're going to have to explain this to me. I've been wanting to ask you for a while. What is an outfitter? I know that's probably a stupid question.
No, there are no stupid questions, especially when being asked by an international assassin. It's been a while. It's been a while since we talked, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. But don't worry, yeah. I've been hard at work, doing spy things.
How many people have you, air quotes, taken care of since we've last talked?
You know I can't tell you information like that, Rob.
I do, but I was, I got to ask. I don't know. What was your question? I'm sure it was good.
Tell me what an outfitter is.
Oh, yeah. So what I do is I lease ground from my neighbors, the hunting ground, and then I, in a sense, sublease it to people. So I have people come in from mainly the East Coast to hunt that ground, and then I have a hunting lodge, too, so they stay here.
Got it. And what kinds of humans are these? Like, who are the people that come?
What's that now?
What kinds of, what's the profile of person that comes? Is it like a regular hunter or is it someone that's never hunted before? Like who comes?
Oh, no, these are guys that have hunted a lot. I mean, we're after people that know what they're doing because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's my reputation that's out there. So, no, I'm not going to let some Yahoo come out here and start slinging arrows in the sky.
Does anyone bow hunt or is it all guns?
Yeah, it's mainly bow hunting. I think we've got 4 groups of bow hunters, and then we have 2 groups of shotgun.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, my dad does a bit of bow hunting, so I've grown up around that, but I didn't connect it. I mean, I knew outfitter was a hunting thing, but I didn't piece together all the different pieces.
Gotcha.
So cool. So you have the outfitter, and then you have mm-hmm. the farm as well. Tell me about the farm.
Yeah, I've taken over the family farm and then been very lucky to have been able to expand that. So I'm a full-time farmer, but here in the Midwest, it's not very exciting. We grow corn and soybeans. That's it. I don't have any livestock anymore. I got out of that in 2008. So it's just raising row crops.
And what kind of livestock did you have? Hogs or?
Yeah, but I don't want to talk about that. Those are bad memories.
Right. Okay. Great. We'll move on. Yeah. Or I'll come back when you're least expecting it.
Yeah. It's awkward when you ask someone a question like that and then you find out they don't want to talk about it, isn't it?
No, not until you ask if it's awkward, I think.
Well, I guess I have a bigger heart than you do. Maybe. Maybe that's what it is.
Definitely. Yeah, I think definitely. So you took over the farm and you're farming full time. How, like, when on the journey did you start getting into social media and podcasting and like why? How did that happen?
Well, you know, here in the States, you've got a big farm group that's kind of the way that you, I guess, make a name for yourself. I don't know, that you do stuff that's relevant. And I got kicked out of that. So about 4 years ago, I started on Twitter and my electricity went out on about Christmas and I didn't get it back till New Year's. So I went on a rant for about a week to my power company and it pretty much went viral. And I kind of took off that popularity and continued with Twitter as a social media platform. And then 2 years ago, I started a podcast about agriculture and that's where we're at now.
So when you did this rant on Twitter, did you have any intention of it going viral? Were you like, oh, this is a way to like do something different? Or you literally were just like, I just want to tell people about how crap this is?
Listen, here's what happened, right? So our electricity went out and we had this little tiny generator that would run the furnace and that's about it. So I had to sit home and babysit that. The rest of the family went to the in-laws. So I'm sitting there, you can't do anything else but like sit there and think of bad thoughts towards your power company. So that's what it was. I just had nothing else to do.
Got it.
Yeah.
Right. And so then like why the jump to podcast? So like having a following on Twitter doesn't necessarily mean you decide to start a podcast. So why did you decide to do that?
It seems to. No, I don't know. You know, we had... I had Carrie Zilka come in. She was a hunter and a social media presence. And she's been doing a podcast on hunting for a long time. And, you know, talking to her, it's something that I wanted to do. And so yeah, that's basically how it got started.
And did you have like a strategy where you were like, oh, I'm going to, you know, ask these kinds of questions and this kind of guests and I want to grow it and get a sponsor? Or was it just like, let's see what happens? Like what was your kind of...
No.
Thought.
I had no damn idea what it was, what I was doing. And I think that's some of the beauty of it is, you know, I was asking questions that you probably shouldn't ask people, but I didn't know any better, you know, zero media training, you know, just kind of went at it. And, you know, I don't know. It seemed like it was kind of resonating with people.
Do you feel like you're, cause I only know you on social media and on the podcast. And do you feel like you're yourself? Like if I came and spent a week with you, would I be like, oh, he's really different on the show than he is in person?
No, you would think I'm like a super guy in person. No, I don't know. I don't know. That's kind of my personality, right? Is I don't like talking about myself. I just like asking questions. I love finding out things about other people, things outside of agriculture, things about the way other people farm, just stuff that's different than I do day to day. It fascinates me.
Yeah.
So yeah. What better platform just to ask people? You were on it. You remember that? That was fun.
Yes, I do remember that. It was fun. I remember because I reached out asking if you'd come on my podcast and somehow I ended up coming on yours instead.
Yeah. That's when you know you're dealing with a professional, yo.
Is that what that
is? Right. Yes, something like that.
So you now have a sponsor in the form of Farmer's Edge. How did that come about? Were you looking for a sponsor? Did you approach them? Did they approach you? How'd that happen?
No, I mean, the podcast was gaining some traction and we had Leaning Pines Design approach us and they're like, hey, your marketing is horrid and horrible. Like, can I help you in it? I'm like, well, this is just for fun. I don't want to pay. She's like, just run an ad for me on your podcast, which I had no idea. So it started that way. And then we did some companies, and then a company called Thunderstruck Ag advertised 1 week, and it was probably the best thing that happened because he did a promo code. So if someone called in to Thunderstruck, they got like a 10% discount or whatever if they used the promo Shark Farm or something like that. And that right there, so I could show that there was an effective advertising on a podcast. And then that kind of went over to Farmer's Edge and Marina Barnes, the head of marketing, who is a very mean person, but very smart. She grabbed me and so they're the sole sponsor of the podcast.
Right. And I think it's so funny because you're like pretty non-traditional, I would say, in terms of how you talk about Farmer's Edge. And I haven't really heard anyone else doing that, like kind of being so off the cuff. And it's funny, right? And it obviously resonates with your listeners. Is that, again, did you have like a strategy there in terms of how you were going to kind of messaging and all that? Or is it just totally off the cuff as it sounds?
No, they send me these scripts every week. There's a girl in marketing that is in charge of sending me scripts every week for the podcast, Double J Ginger. And she sends them to me, and they're just so wordy. And she wants like everything that they do in like a 60-second ad. So I don't really even look at them anymore. So I kind of see what they're doing on Twitter, and I make fun of them, and it seems to work.
Right. It does seem to work. It's obviously going well. I love it. And I think it's funny, and I'm sure it helps them too. I wanted to kind of ask you about that ag tech space, because Farmer's Edge is one of the companies that's doing pretty well in the ag tech space. Is ag tech even a word that you would use to describe the technology in agriculture, or is that something that only folks like me that work in the tech side of things talk about?
No, that's kind of the word, right? That's kind of the catch-all phrase. You know what it is? Anything that like has to do with a monitor or that type of electrical stuff, it seems to all get kind of the catch-all of ag tech. I mean, I love it. I love messing with that stuff because it makes you look at your farm in a completely different way than you did, say, just a few years ago. I mean, to be able to look at your farm from satellites, or to be able to manipulate the way you're planting with guidance of introducing in the variable rate planting stuff that is just like completely off the grid just a few years ago.
And what do you said it's kind of transformed things. Like what, is it really changing how you farm, or is it more kind of just interesting and fun, or like what's been the shift in kind of, how you actually run the business based on all this technology, if any?
Oh, it completely makes me anyway, look at it, a farm completely different from how I'm going to fertilize it to how I'm going to seed it to even how I'm going to tillage it. To plan it, everything is looked at differently because now I don't have to blanket that field anymore. That field, if I can look at the different soils, the different moisture levels, I can plant a different variety in that on the go. I mean, I don't have to stop and clean out my whole planter, all that stuff. The fertilizer, you could put right on where the plant's going to go so it can utilize it the best. All this stuff that we did as farming, 20 years ago was all just kind of, and it worked, right? You just went out there as a field and you looked at it as one piece of ground. You don't have to do that anymore. You can look at a field and look at it as like 100 different mini fields.
Yeah. So what grade would you give yourself on kind of technology? Like, are you a like super pointy end of the curve, A+ technology user, or are there people out there that are kind of using this stuff way more than you are? Like where do you sit on that spectrum?
Well, I give myself a D+, but I talk to people that have an A+. So I think that's a difference. I don't try to understand the ins and outs of it. I know what I want to do, and I need to find the right person to help me do that.
And so how do you do that? Do you find people like, consultants or people that are paid to do that? Or is it more kind of through social media and informal ways that you get help?
More and more, like with the company, even if you're talking about tractors, you're talking about your digital imagery, all that. A lot of these companies put out good products, right? You don't buy a bad tractor or combine anymore. I mean, there's something good and bad about all of them, but they're all good machines. So I'm looking more at service now, and I'm looking at what's going to happen when I break down, who's going to help me utilize that machine in the best way. So I look at service just about as much as I look at price anymore.
And how do you do that? Like, obviously you don't know until it breaks. So is it try and then see how it goes? Or do you get like reviews or ask them? Like, how do you actually evaluate that?
Well, in agriculture, we aren't afraid to talk. And when a company is not doing something right, it's usually fairly well known. But yeah. There's been several times where I've been burnt too, you know. And not every company can have a good salesman or a good tech in every part of the country. It happens.
Sure. Do you have any good stories? You don't have to name any companies, but any good failure stories?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I did buy I buy John Deere because I've got a John Deere dealer with a good service department that's 3 miles away. But I mean, I had was buying a utility tractor, and so I went with a different brand because price, and there was a little sensor somewhere deep in it that wasn't working. And I mean, it was like pulling teeth to get anybody to talk to me, because everybody's just saying, well, just bring it in. I don't want to bring it in, because that's going to charge me. That's like $200 just right off the bat for you to look at it. If it's something simple, I want to be able to do it myself. So, I mean, that kind of annoyed me. And yeah, I won't be buying from them again.
Right. It's interesting. So one of the things in the ag tech world, I guess, that gets talked about a lot is this idea of service, and especially for things like, you know, new sensors and Internet of Things. And as we think about robots and more digital stuff and like a whole different kind of skill set that you might need to operate these different technologies on farm, like, is there a new business model or a new kind of company or a new, you know, type of offering or training that needs to exist that's more about the technologies and how to get them to fit and work and all that? And the example that I use or hear a lot is around what Best Buy did with Geek Squad. Like when we kind of first had consumer electronics and they had the Geek Squad going out to fix things. And so there's like do we need Geek Squad for agriculture? Do you think that is needed at all, or that's already like it already exists and people, you know, figure it out because you got to figure it out? Like what's your view on that?
Well, my experience with the Geek Squad has been less than stellar, so that's probably a bad example for me.
What happened?
Well, it's like you buy a laptop, right? And okay, something's in there, something's not working. You call them, and oh, like you've got to bring it in. Okay, so you bring it in, and the line is 17 miles long, and there's no way just to drop it off, and it annoys me. Now, see what you do on your podcast? You get people mad.
I think that you sort of do the same thing, so it's only fair.
You make a valuable point. Yeah. Anyway, Geek Squads for agriculture. I think they've kind of already got them. I mean, they're called different things, but you know, like when I call for like a guidance system or whatever, I'm not just calling the store. I know the guy to call. It's the guidance guy. Actually, that's how I got it in my phone. It's the guidance guy. So, I mean, to a point, they've already got their own Geek Squads kind of in place.
Right. So you think that there's not like the different companies that are selling the different technologies, it's kind of their responsibility to do their own service and to, you know, be there to fix things when they break.
Well, if they want to do business on my farm, yeah, it definitely is.
Fair enough. I want to ask about something that you mentioned, like right when we started talking around big ag organizations and getting kicked out and the kind of advocacy. So this is a term that I think I probably don't fully understand, kind of coming from the outside. So can you explain advocacy and your like relationship with it, I guess?
Yeah. Okay. The word advocate, right? It's like an agriculture advocate, and they made the word advocate.
Yes.
It's very clever in that kind of way.
It makes me feel like I have something like funny in my mouth. Like I can't quite get like I feel like I'm speaking a different language. I feel awkward every time I say it.
You know what's bad is I can't say the word advocate anymore because I've got that stupid word stuck in my brain. It goes the other way too.
There you go.
But it, you know, it's just a way of kind of telling your story or promoting agriculture. To me, it is. It gets a negative term because it's been used, I don't know, kind of as an excuse to tell people how to farm or say that your farm is better than other farms. So like, I don't, just like the organic versus conventional, right? So you're an advocate for the conventional, you're going to bash the organic. I mean, that's not right. But that's why the word advocate gets a bad tone, is because it's been used for things like that.
So let me make sure I understand. So it gets used as like you're kind of polarizing the conversation, or you're only talking about your way of doing it as the right way, not rather than it kind of meaning you're just promoting agriculture or talking in general about like just having the conversation. It's more that you're kind of making it one-sided. That's the insult.
Well, when social media was really taken off in agriculture, I mean, that word popped up, right? And then you had people labeled as advocates. And there would be people that were kind of standing on top of a mountain saying, I'm better than you. This is a way to do it. Your way is dumb. And that's why that word got associated with being bad.
So got it. Okay.
It's not even a real word.
Right.
Yeah. We should end it. You should announce on your podcast that it's no longer a word.
Yeah, I think I could say that. I'm not sure that it would do anything, but more than happy to say
you've
it.
You've got some power. I'm not saying. You're, man, look out.
Yeah.
I mean, you kill people for a living. Let's see, we haven't talked about that yet.
And I'm not planning on it. Thank you very much.
What country are you in right now?
I am in the USA right now. I'm in California.
Huh. So you say. I mean, when I called, like the caller ID said like Uzbekistan or some kind of stan. So I don't believe a word you're saying.
Just got to keep you guessing, Rob.
Yeah, you worry me. Yes.
No, I do still live in Australia, though, but I am home in California right now. I got to get out there to Illinois, though. So I want to ask, so advocacy, one more question on it. It doesn't have anything to do with policy. Like there's no policy, advocacy, any angle there. It's just like a general term.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's a made up word. It could be whatever you want it to be. It could be a houseplant. No one could. So there's not a definition for it. I think it is someone that is promoting agriculture, advocate. But I guarantee you ask other people, they're going to say different things. So when you don't have a firm definition of what it is, it can be whatever you want.
Got it. Okay. That's helpful. So I have a bunch of other myths that I need you to help me debunk. And my next question is a Twitter question. So on Twitter, there's a hashtag no yield tweets. Can you explain that to me?
I don't know. I guess the thought was that it's annoying. That's the thing, is that are there be a lot of people out there that want to tell other people how to run their social media. Yes, they're the same type of people that are making fun of advocates for doing the same thing on that. But I don't know. The idea was to keep the prices high because there was so much corn and soybeans out there. I don't really know. I mean, there again, it's one of those things. It's on social media. You got private jokes, and then people try to understand it and interpret it in different ways. I think the best thing is just to you do you. How about that? Hashtag you do you. I like that one. You can use it if you want.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate that. I'll fully attribute it to you and give you credit.
Well, thank you.
Right. Okay. So that's helpful. I got that one. So the other one is that you talk about a lot is Ag Twitter. Is that like a concept or is it a hashtag? Like how does one use or be on Ag Twitter?
Well, I mean, Ag Twitter is one section of agriculture. And if you do the numbers, it's actually a very, very small section of agriculture. But it can be pretty powerful. You can learn a lot from it. You can sit and watch the way other people are farming, and if you stay positive and actually listen, you can actually gain a lot from it. You know, the problem is with all social media, you get a lot of negativity in there, and I think a lot of people write that off just because they don't want to deal with it or, you know, kind of be around that negative talk. But you know, if you use it right, if you go in there with the right attitude, it can be something that is going to be an asset for your farm.
So is it a thing though? Like it's when you say go there or be there, or it's a small section or the numbers, like, is it a, like, how is it defined? Is it a hashtag? Is it a group of people? Like what, help me understand what it is.
I don't know. There again, it's not a defined term, but to me, it's just people on Twitter that are talking about agriculture. Okay. That's what I always thought it was.
Got
Why?
It.
What do you think it is?
Well, I guess that's what I thought, but then when you started saying the number of people or how big it is, I was thinking like maybe it's a list or a hashtag or a like something that's more defined than I understood. But that's kind of what I thought. It was like people on Twitter talking about ag.
Is there a list? Because I'm probably left off it. I mean, that hurts my feelings when that happens.
Well, I wasn't really supposed to tell you, but you know.
See? Okay.
No, I don't think so. Rob, did I hear that you're on a TV show?
Well, okay, so Successful Farming TV, and they have it, and then I've got a segment on there. Like I don't even know when it's like every other month, every month, every 2 weeks. It's on there sporadically, but yes, I get on there and I talk about whatever's on my mind. It's like 4 minute segments, and yeah, I did just recently sign up for the second season of it, so I haven't ticked them off yet.
So you like it? You like being on TV?
Well, how could you not like being on TV? It's awesome. It's TV. So yeah, and then you get to go in front of a camera, and you talk to TV people in their TV lingo, and I just nod my head like I know what they're talking about.
Somehow I don't believe that. I have to confess, though, I didn't grow up with a TV, and I don't have a TV, so maybe you're not really talking to the right audience here.
Are you Amish?
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Can you imagine if
no
I was
TV,
Amish?
Huh?
I'm like, actually, yeah, I am.
Well, it would make sense then. So no, you've never had a TV?
No, my dad's house never had one. My mom's house did, but we don't have one now. So my house in Australia doesn't have one.
What do you do? Do you watch the dingoes?
Just listen to your podcast, Rob.
You know what? You're okay. I'm just going to say that.
No, I do listen to a lot of podcasts, but no, yeah, we shouldn't have a TV. So I've always, it's interesting. I feel like there's so many shows on TV now that just didn't exist when I was growing up and we had a TV, and I didn't know you were on TV until I was poking around the internet thinking about what I should talk to you about. And so, yeah, that's pretty cool. Do you like the TV show more than the podcast? Do you have a favorite?
Actually the favorite is the XM radio show. That I just love doing that. And we're worried about it because we're doing it every day, Monday through Friday. And I'm like, well, and people that were trying to get me to do other stuff, they're like, well, you do not want to do that because you're going to be married to that. And it's going to be such a drag. I can't wait. We pre-recorded one today, and I was actually all like depressed when we were supposed to be doing a recording, because I love doing it. I love talking to people on the radio and making fun of them.
Why do you love it so much?
It fascinates me to have people talk about their lives and, you know, just kind of have that conversation style of, hey, you know, what are you doing? What's interesting about you? How can I make fun of you? How can you make fun of me? That type of thing.
I love that you go into it with that angle. You're like, all right, how can I get them? Watch out.
Have you heard the story about the scorpion and the frog?
I don't think this is going to end well, but no.
Okay, so the scorpion needed a ride across the pond. He said, hey, frog, give me a ride. And the frog's like, no, you stupid scorpion, you'll sting me. And the scorpion's like, no, I won't sting you, because if I sting you, we're both going to drown. And the frog's like, okay, well, that makes sense. So the scorpion gets on the frog, and they're swimming across the pond, and the scorpion stings the frog. And as they're both going down, the frog goes, why would you sting me? Now we're both going to die. And the scorpion goes, oh, it's the scorpion. I am what I am. This is what I do. So yeah, I'm a scorpion.
Got it. Well, I'll just maybe try not to be a frog. And apparently that's the moral of the story.
I figured you'd appreciate that, being from Australia.
Yeah. It's funny. Everyone thinks that everything's just going to kill you in Australia, and it's really not true. Like, it's, you know, a city and a country like everywhere else, and it's not that bad. But anyways, I think there are scorpions there.
You answer this. Is there a thing there that can bite you and kill you?
Is there a thing on your farm that can bite you and kill you?
There is not.
That's not true. There's got to be snakes or spiders or humans.
Humans. There's no zombies. No, there is no poisonous reptiles or snakes or scorpions or spiders in my world here. None. Zip zero.
Just hunters.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. This is I love this conversation.
So tell me, I love that you get to talk to so many different people. What has been like a favorite guest or story or moment?
No. And you know better than to ask this. Cause what if I turn around and ask you that? It's not fair. It's the worst question you could ask another podcaster. Cause then you're playing favorites. You did that on purpose.
I think, okay, fine. I'll ask it a different way. What's, gonna try again. What's a thing you've learned in podcasting? Not like a technical podcasting thing, but maybe something about, farming or about agriculture, like a cool thing that you've learned or something that's changed how you think about agriculture.
Oh, that's simple. Well, as far as like podcasting is easy, because when I first started, you're like nervous. And so I'd get like 20 questions, right? And I would make sure I would get those 20 questions answered, no matter if the person was done talking or not. So it's like, and even say if they said something like really, I don't know, really interesting, that like they dangled this huge fruit out there, but my next question was about something else, I just move on. Once I stopped doing that, it made a huge difference. When I actually started, you know, listening to what they were saying, I mean, yeah, you don't get through your list of questions, but I mean, the interviews are better.
Yeah. How did you figure out how to do that? Like just practice, or did someone give you a tip?
You would kind of see, right? So when you have the feedbacks from the podcast, the things that were getting talked about were generally the things that I didn't have on my list as far as questions. So it just kind of learned from that.
Yeah. Right. So I want to ask you about your other podcast too, which I will admit I've listened to less, but the Farmer and the City Girl podcast, how is that one going? Why'd you decide to start it? I feel like that's, honestly, when I thought about starting a podcast, that was the kind of thing I wanted to do, was like bridge the gap or kind of, talk about ag things with ag experts for maybe for a non-ag audience. And then I realized that I'd actually much rather talk to an ag audience, if I can, but I'm curious, like, how's that podcast going? Why'd you start it? Has that evolved at all? Like, is it kind of working? Do you feel like you're making a difference or having the impact that you wanted to make when you started it?
Oh yeah, it's completely changed. It started again with Carrie Zolka, and she was a city girl, I was a farmer, and we were trying to bridge a gap. Man, that's so difficult to do. And then Carrie, she does like 9 million different things. So she moved on, and I started doing it with Leslie Kelly from Saskatchewan. And we changed it to What the Farm Podcast. Still trying to do the same concept. And again, it just, I don't know. It was fine. And I guess as like podcasts go, it was doing fine. But I guess I was used to Shark Farmer, so I wanted more. So we sat down, and we had this big, long conversation, Leslie and I did. And we're like, you know, the thing about farmers, when they want to educate the public, it's this deal where we just want to tell them how they're wrong and we're right. And we don't do a whole lot of listening, if we're honest with ourselves. So that's kind of a way we've gone now, is that we're talking more and more to non-ag people, and we're just listening to their thoughts on things and why they think, you know, so why does a vegan choose to be a vegan? Why does the mom in the grocery store choose to buy organic? And it's not a deal like we're out to change their mind in our interview, but we just want people in agriculture to at least understand why they're thinking what they're thinking.
And what kind of feedback have you gotten? Like, do you get more kind of ag people saying, wow, this helped me to think about it in a different way, or consumers saying like, I'm so glad you're doing this. Like what kind of feedback do you get?
Yes, you get some of that, and that's unbelievable. That's great. You know, but you kind of pay more attention to the people that said, all right, so this changed my mind on this. And then you kind of want to know more about how you did that. How you changed an opinion, either on the ag side or the non-ag side. I mean, that's kind of what's curious to both Leslie and myself.
And what are the insights so far?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just all over the place. It's fun. I think if anything, it just will maybe teach us to listen more. And it's funny, the people that we've interviewed, we don't really, you know, have a bunch of facts to argue with them. We will say a few things, and it's funny that, you know, like all of a sudden they'll be jumping in conversations on social media about GMOs and going, well, yeah, I used to think this, but, you know, I did get looking into it differently. So we haven't changed minds, but we've made our guests think a different way, and we haven't pushed anything on them. I think just by listening to them and maybe throwing a few things out there that, you know, what we believe, it's made a difference in some cases anyway.
Yeah. That's been my experience too, is having the conversation. I guess the frustrating part of that for me is it just feels so unscalable. Like, okay, every person has to have this conversation before we're going to change people's minds. Like that seems overwhelming to me that it's going to be so slow, and not that the goal is to change people's minds, but to kind of find common ground, right? Or find better ways to talk about this and ways to learn and like kind of start to bring out the facts and have different opinions and both sides get to listen, all the things we kind of want to do. It just seems so unscalable. I don't know. Do you ever feel frustrated by that?
Hey, you know how to eat an elephant?
One bite at a time?
One bite at a frickin' time.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It is. It does. It seems very daunting, but it's not like there's a time frame on it, right? I mean, there's been a certain percentage of people that haven't eaten meat for how long. It's not going to go away. But, you know, if there's people out there that are making decisions based on things that aren't true, I mean, that's where we want to focus. If someone doesn't want to eat meat because they believe it's wrong to kill an animal, I mean, that's their belief. I that's not my place to try to change that belief. I mean, that's what they believe. But if they want to do it because they think animals are being raised a certain way and they're not, well, that's where I'd like to step in and say, hey, you know, I think you're wrong in thinking this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. I guess one, so I was just at a conference the other day, kind of focusing on social license or on kind of right to farm, this kind of conversation and what consumers think. And one of the I guess aspects of conversation that came up was there's so many different farming practices, and the gentleman who was speaking was a farmer and was saying that he, you know, he and most of the kind of farmers around him and the guys that he know and are the ones that are probably producing 80% of the value, you know, that kind of 20% producing 80% of the value, are farming often in a way that is, you know, more in line with consumers and is best practices and isn't, you know, beating up animals and whatever myths that might be out there. But there is a whole aspect of the spectrum or whole group of farmers that maybe practices aren't up to snuff. And so that's like, how do you have that conversation? Have you, like, I don't know, what's your view on that? Do you think A, that's true? And B, like, how does that change the conversation if there are kind of different spectrums of I guess, quality of practices in this area?
Yeah, there's nothing that makes me cringe more than to see someone in agriculture doing something that's obviously wrong. And, you know, sometimes they just don't know. Sometimes they're trying to save a buck. Sometimes it is filmed in a wrong light that makes it that way. But yes, when something like that comes up in ag, I think the main thing is everybody wants to rally around it because we just want ag to be right and everybody else to be wrong. But when something's being done wrong in ag, I think ag needs to own it. We're like, okay, the way he's doing things is not the norm. and is not good. It doesn't look good for whatever reason. That has to be more than just an opinion too. So like if you see someone out there that is like spraying a field in 40 mile an hour wind, yeah, that's the time you speak up. If you see someone out there that's spraying a like 15 mile an hour wind, you generally keep your mouth shut because that can be okay or it can't be okay. But yeah, so I don't know if I answer your question, but it makes me happy.
Yeah, well, I think that there's a couple things, right? One is like calling that person out or defending it or like defending against it, I guess. And the other is the frustration of kind of like, hey, buddy, you're messing this up for the rest of us, which I imagine is frustrating. I always think like, I mean, it's probably naive in the kind of world I live in, but it seems like such a potential benefit or opportunity that consumers care so much and want to know where things come from and want to engage. Like I have a lot of friends in the city that love that I work in agriculture and ask me all the time about like, what are the farms like and what are the farmers like? And is the drought really bad in Australia? And what does that mean? And are GMOs this and that? And I love having those conversations, probably like you do, because you get to tell different stories and help people learn. But there's also this kind of resistance from the ag side, like, you know, just let us farm and, you know, we know best. And I guess I find that really frustrating is because it seems like such an opportunity to tell the stories and to engage with consumers and talk about different practices. But yet there's also this kind of maybe unwillingness unwillingness to do that.
Well, yeah. And it's because we've been bitten before, right? As agriculture, I mean, things have been reported badly or people are saying things differently. So it's not hard to get jaded. It really isn't.
Yeah.
But a lot of times when you talk to people that are outside of agriculture, they find out you're a farmer or whatever. I can't tell you how many times someone will like, oh, you know, I had an uncle that used to, or, you know, whatever. I knew a farmer and he did this. I mean, they're interested. It's not a deal like where people aren't interested in where their food comes from. They are. They need to be talked to in the right way, which is not easy for a farmer. Because we have our own lingo. We know what we're talking about. When we say we spray a field, we know it's safe, but they don't. It's just something that we have to have a lot of patience with and we have to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's true. I think the lingo thing, I mean, just in the tech world, it's really hard working with, for example, entrepreneurs who maybe haven't spent time on farms or haven't, don't know that lingo and trying to bridge that gap. It's like the tech people are speaking tech lingo and the farm people are speaking farm lingo and they kind of aren't talking to each other. And you're like, right, no good solutions are going to be developed here today until we can find common language. So yeah, I guess it's a bit of the same thing on the consumer side. Do you like, I don't know how you get all this done. So I'm hoping you can give me some like productivity advice. Like you have a million businesses and podcasts and a farm and an outfitter, like how do you spend your day across all of these different things? Like, how do you get all this done?
Well, the biggest reason is I have a very good support system around me, starting with my wife. My wife has moved into the producer role of the XM show. She has also stepped up in editing and producing the podcast too. And I've surrounded myself with people that are smarter than me. I use Rural Gone Urban is my booking agent for the speeches. It's because I have zero idea how to do that. I mean, it's if you try to negotiate a price and I'm just absolutely horrible at it, she knows what she's doing. So, I mean, it's just it's simple to me. I try to work with very good people. Leslie Kelly has been phenomenal to work with. And she goes out there and she tries to find the best guest. And, you know, as far as like on that podcast, that makes the world a difference out there. So Ag PhD, I've gone with those guys, and you know, Brian and Darren Hefty are the absolute top of the ag media game. In my mind, they sit at the very top and they're such outliers by doing it. I saw no other choice but then to go with those guys as far as like teaming up with an ag media company.
So I'm not familiar with them. What do they do with you or what do you do with them?
Well, they, you know, Ag PhD Media was basically Brian and Darren Hefty, and they do the TV show, they do the radio show, but I mean, they're their own media company. So I went to them and I tried to convince them that they needed to take me on to it. And somehow I convinced them. Someday they're going to wise up and realize that that was a mistake. But until then, it's going to be a lot of fun.
There you go. Ride it while you can. So that wasn't really any, so one tip there was surround yourself with good people, good support system. How do you decide, like, you do speaking and you do a TV show, and like when the next thing comes to you and they're like, Rob, do you want to be on a game show? And do you want to do this? And do you want to do that? Like, how do you decide what you say yes or no to?
It is not just my decision. You know, it's made with my family in mind, with my other obligations in mind. You know, you only got so much time to do stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of thought into trying to do anything new. But you never know what that new thing's going to be. So we go into everything with an open mind. I do enjoy this. I enjoy doing stuff. I mean, I don't enjoy talking to you so much, but I enjoy the rest of this stuff. So, I mean, it's not like it's a horrible job that I have to sit down at a desk for, you know, for whatever hours a day. I mean, I look forward to it every time I get up.
Yeah, that's, I think that's obviously really important. Otherwise, definitely don't do it. Do you have like an end goal though? Like, are you like, most of the things I'm trying to do are about, you know, making, you know, I'm optimizing for money and change in ag and, you know, brand so that we get more customers to do this. Like, is there a either business or like good for the world or kind of larger strategy at work that you are thinking about with all these different activities?
Well, you know, if I'm honest with myself, I wanted to be on XM. I mean, to me, that was kind of an end goal. So getting there is, you know, was a huge deal for us, and we couldn't be more proud. So now we've got to own it. I mean, we've got to be good at it. And that means, you know, getting good people to talk to, learning a lot very, very quickly. Even just the simple things like the timing of the commercials and all that. It was just a huge learning curve. So yeah, we are focused solely on making what we've got the best.
Yeah, I can imagine it's so different. Like the idea of having commercials and timing and, but it's a bit faster paced and, yeah, like probably a whole different world and different skill set. Did you guys do any training or like learn about it in any kind of structured way, or it's just been jump all in and
no.
It works?
No.
Somehow no. I'm not
it
surprised by the answer.
Seriously, it was the first show was live at the Hefty Brothers Field Day. And yeah, it was, we just showed up and did my thing.
So, tell me, Rob, this is kind of my last question for you here. I think in 10 years, how is the ag industry different, and how is your day-to-day different? Are you still doing all this? Are you on the radio? Do you have 17 podcasts? Do you like what does your life look like, and how's the ag system different in 10 years? And you can pick a different time frame if you want, but can't be like next year because that's too easy.
It's impossible. Okay. It's easy to answer because there's no answer. 2.5 years ago, I didn't have any of this. So I think the thing that I've learned the most is that you never box yourself in. I mean, I don't know if maybe I'll be on Mars in 10 years, right? Well, that sounds completely stupid, but I'm not going to say I won't, because you can't give yourself any boundaries. I want to do the best I can, and I don't even know what that is. And I think that was one of my biggest struggles for the longest time, is I didn't know what I wanted to do. And it wasn't until I kind of figured out that was okay, then I kind of figured out some of the things I wanted to do, as dumb as that sounds. But no, I was very caught up. I was like, oh, you know, I want to do something. Leslie puts it very well. I steal this from her all the time. She says, like, this desire to create that you have, and you just don't know what to do with it. Well, that's where I was. I wanted to do something. And I thought, you know, okay, I'm out of the farm groups. And that was like the only thing that I could do to make a difference. That was the dumbest thing to think. But yet that's the way I was thinking. I've changed my mind so much on things. It's such a constant learning process. it's okay to not know what's next. It's okay to not know what you want to do next. But you better not put any boundaries on yourself, because that is an easy way of not moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's certainly been my experience too, that kind of activity is the most important thing, and it matters less like how strategic it is or in which direction it's pointed, but like keep doing stuff and figure out what works, and you start to get a feel for what you like doing and what's resonating with people, and like kind of goes from there. Sounds like that was a bit of your experience too.
Yeah, but you're a really smart person. It's harder for guys like me.
It doesn't seem like it was hard for you, and I definitely think that you might beat me in an IQ test. We'll have to put that to the test.
No, you're like some, I don't know. It's like Mensa's not even good enough for you. You're like some like Doogie Howser or something.
I do 7 Mensa before breakfast. No. I don't think I've ever done a Mensa.
That's probably because they're below you.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah. When do I get to ask you questions?
Go on. You can have one.
Okay. Okay. All right. You ready?
No.
I know. I just say you're ready because that's a trick, because I'm still thinking of the question. All right. If you could change one thing as the way people perceive agriculture, what would it be?
That's a good question. Mm-hmm. I think,
I know
that's why they pay you the big bucks. I would change, I think the GMO thing would probably be like, that seems like the gateway drug, I think, to a lot of this stuff. like if you go down the GMO rabbit hole and you start to really understand like the, not so much the technology, but like kind of why GMOs were created, what they do, how they're being used, and then the polarization and what the activist groups, and if you go down that rabbit hole and watch the different movies and different sides, like you can't, at least I couldn't help but get a really like nuanced and like it's just so complex, and then from there like everything else you kind of look at twice. You're like, oh, that's probably not that simple, like probably whatever source I'm looking at is oversimplifying it, and so you have a like that kind of appreciation of there's probably 2 or 3 sides to this story, and so I want to learn that. And so to me like understanding the kind of GMO story and how complex that issue and has gotten and how polarized is, yeah, I think people understanding that would change things, because you might look twice at a bunch of the other complex issues in ag and start to do more of that listening and have more of those conversations. So I think that's what I'd change.
If I showed up in Australia, could I stay in your guest room?
Yes, you can.
Sweet. Yeah, but this has been a great interview.
Yeah, well, you're going to have to come speak at various things, and I might not pay you what your agent wants me to.
All of a sudden, I'm finding a hotel.
How would you answer that question, Rob? What would you change?
No. You said I got to answer or ask a question. No, you don't get to turn that around.
Well, I think I just did.
I would focus on the GMO thing, because that seems to be the gateway drug. No, I think you nailed it. That seems to be a very entry-level one that can head people down the rabbit hole. No, you did see how good you are at stuff.
Well, I'm going to have you on all the time if you're just going to compliment me.
Okay.
Oh, cool. Well, Rob, I really appreciate you talking to me. I always enjoy chatting with you, and I might make you do this more, whether we're recording or not, because I really do like having these conversations with you. So thank you so much.
You got my number anytime.
Careful what you wish for. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Ag Tech So What. You can stay up to date with the latest episodes and news at agtechsowhat.com.
And as always, if you have any feedback or other guests to recommend, we'd love to hear from you. Just hop on the website and leave us a comment or send us a message. Finally, if you like what you're hearing, and we hope you do, please share the podcast with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time.